cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 72 of Crosshairs Radio. Or should I say Crosshairs Radio? On today's show, we have another episode of our mountain bike coverage, but we got a special guest that is going to bridge the gap between cyclocross and mountain bike. We have the current U.S. men's cyclocross national champion, Stephen Hyde, live from Spain on the show. And, you know, we haven't talked to Stephen really since he won the national championship. So we're going to get into that a little bit, you know, and sort of get some cyclocross news in there and a small cyclocross interview just to meet that hunger that I know you guys have. And then after that, we're going to get into some other stuff, training and mountain bike, and how his plan is to not do any road this year, but get on the trails instead and jump into some XC races. So that's going to be awesome to watch and awesome for us to follow along. As always, this show is brought to you by Health IQ. Health IQ is a life insurance company that celebrates the health conscious, including cyclists. If you visit healthiq.com/cxhairs, you can learn more and get a free quote and check out their life insurance FAQ page to get all of your questions answered. They've been awesome to us. I don't want to beat you over the head with the Health IQ plugs because I know you hear it from us every week, but if that's what it's going to take to get you guys to go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, I think it's worth it, and I think that you will be happy with the results if you don't already have life insurance coverage, or if you do and you're looking to get even better coverage or see what your other options are. The Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. This is the other sponsor of the show. This is the other thing that I want you all to go support. Go to wideanglepodium.com. Check out all of the shows. Subscribe to the shows. We want to start boosting those listeners. We want to keep you involved for us with the cyclocross show. That's why we're trying to do mountain biking and trying to get into other things, because we want to keep you engaged. We want to hear from you, and we want you to be members of the podcast network. Wideanglepodium.com. Become a member. It can donate as little as $5 a month. A little more than that is going to help us. We're bringing on a lot of shows. We're really throwing a lot of content out there to you, and we want you to be a part of it, and we want you to take pride in seeing this podcast network be a success. Other than that, I'm going to be at Sea Otter when that happens next weekend, two weekends, whenever that is. But if you're around, come say hi. I'll be hanging out at the Trek Factory Racing XC tent. I'll actually probably be all over the place, but that'll be my home base. Would love to chat if you're going to be out there for that event. If you're not going to be out there but still want to say hi, you can do that at feedback@cxhairs.com. You can also call the helpline, 405-CX-HAIRS, and we'll get to all of your questions and comments and concerns, and also follow along on Twitter @CX-HAIRS and @CrosshairsRadio, and on Instagram @CX-HAIRS. We got Taylor Jones in the basement with me. We got Kevin Hayes calling in from Tennessee. He had to take time out from his enduroing to sit down and record the show. And we got the man, Stephen Hyde, live from Spain. Oh, I almost forgot. We also have some special bonus coverage at the end of this episode. Kevin was able to sit down with Kerry Werner and also Spencer Paxson, who were in town riding picks up. They're also doing a Kona demo, so it's cool to hear from those guys too. And Kerry's able to get the trash talking going early against Hyde for the upcoming mountain bike season. Okay, let's go to the show. Can you hear it, Taylor?
Yeah, go.
Oh, okay. All right. We're back again. Crosshairs Radio. This is a mountain bike edition number two. Do we have is it Crosshairs Radio? Is that what we're going with?
I thought that was a pretty solid suggestion.
Cool. Yeah.
Seems as good as anything.
Give that to Results Boy.
Yeah. For that, thank you, Colin.
That idea. And week two of the Crosshairs Radio mountain bike crossover, I think it's only fitting that our first guest is sort of doing his own cyclocross to mountain bike crossover, and joining us live from Spain is Stephen Hyde.
Hey, hi,
how's it going?
It's going awesome. Yeah, I am. I'm in Malaga. I'm in Spain. I've been here forever. I came over here after cross season. I was like, oh, I'll take a little vacation and do some bike riding. And I swear I'm going to come home, but it's been months.
Yeah, so
they might not actually let me back in the country at this point.
That's I don't know. Let you in, Stephen Hyde. That'll get by TSA.
That ginger charm.
Yeah. Basically, right after nationals, you disappeared. And was the length of this stay planned, or were you just having so much fun you decided to stay longer?
No, this was the length. I mean, normally I would go home back to East Hampton and go like run around in the snow and like throw snowballs at Jeremy and Al, but last year I went back and there was no snow, so I was kind of bummed out, but I normally would like go skiing or something like that, and then take off in the spring to like LA. I go stay with a friend of mine in LA, Rob and those cats out there, and usually just do my training there. So I figured it was like cheaper and easier for me to just fly straight here. I had a bunch of friends coming here. It's basically LA, but it's like half the price of LA.
Nice. So riding wise though, did you, what are you doing now? Did you take any time off, or was it just straight back to training? And I guess along with that, you know, I sort of teased it before, you going from cyclocross to mountain bike. So no road season this year.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about not having a road season. Although I'll do a couple of races. I'll do some New England racing. I mean, luckily, you know, we have so many good races in New England and there's so many good racers. So it'll definitely be worth my time to go out there and pedal around. My plan here, you know, Cannondale decided they were going to, after a little bit of convincing, that they were going to back me for, my own program here. It's still through, basically it's just an extension of the Cyclocross World program, and it's just me, and it's kind of my foray back into it. And after nationals, I took my double bike bag with my cross bike and my mountain bike in it. And so then, you know, my plan was after the last of the Euro cross races, I would come over here to Spain, which I did on February 7th, I think. And then I took a month off. I took 4 weeks off the bike, which is the longest period of time I've taken off the bike without injury. It was excruciating, absolutely excruciating. But I spent like a week here. I did some cooling down. I went to London. I hung out with my friend Rob and Christine. We went from there I went to Madrid first, and then we went to London, and then went to Switzerland. And went to the Alps, and it was awesome. It was cold, and then went back to London, and then I came back here. So I got some vacationing in. It was righteous.
So just sort of backtracking, since I think this is the first time a lot, you know, we've gotten to talk to you after winning the national championship, and now sort of sitting on that for a while. How has that sunk in, and how has that sort of changed your outlook for the future for cyclocross? I mean, what are the new goals?
Yeah, well, my main goal was to blow up and act like I don't know nobody. So I did that. I left all my friends. I don't know anybody now. I'm still got another year on my contract with Stu in Cannondale Cyclocross World, which is awesome. We're gonna kick it a little harder in Euroland this year, hopefully kind of spend more time in Belgium and the Netherlands, and do some more racing, do some more series racing, do more World Cups. I'm changing my focus a little bit. I think I want to, I have never really prepared specifically for the World Cups before. And it's always kind of left me flat for those races. You know, you pick your battles, right? Like, I feel like everyone's going good for the World Cup, so maybe I'll try to go good for other races. So I'm going to switch that up this year, see what I can make happen with it. I don't know. I just want to have, like, the most fun year in the Stars and Stripes as possible. And I feel like if I do that, the potential for me having a second year in the Stars and Stripes is going to be even better.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
do you, mm-hmm. Do you wear your Stars and Stripe kit while you train?
I actually don't have one currently. So what happened is, see, what happened was they made a kit quickly. And there is a thing with USA Cycling that you have to use their template. Which I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but it's been around for a couple of years now. And they really haven't pushed that on anyone except for me. So that was cool. So I had a kit, and then I can't ride it, so I don't. But Giro gave me a helmet, and so that's cool. And Oakley gave me some super sweet EV Path glasses that I got to pick out the colors on and stuff. I went with gold lenses. It's pretty lit. but we're working on – I have an email going with Cannondale now, so we're working on some pretty ridiculous, good-looking bikes and kits and stuff moving forward. But also, I'm the Continental Championship – or champion, right? So I actually have to wear that kit anyways by UCI regulation.
Man, we're getting back into the rules.
Yeah. Well, but it's
the man's really getting me down, man.
But I don't think that that our federation yet has passed that to be mandatory, unless they did it at the last meeting. It was still
I mean, that's what they told me is I have to wear that kit. It does trump. Okay. Well, I don't like that word. Sorry. I have to wear that, at least in competition. So, I mean, I don't have, you know, I only have a couple of those white skin suits and the Continental Champ.
It's interesting because, you know, Katie Compton last year, she was kind of switching back and forth between
the National Champ kit and the Continental Champ kit. The European Federation said... Yes, the UCI rule was sort of wishy-washy, and it gave the power to the individual federations to decide if the person wanted to wear their national championship jersey over the continental championship. Europe decided that, no, we want everybody to have their Euro kits on. That's why, you know, you never saw it when I'm blanking on
Vanderhaar.
Well, not even who's the world champion, women's world champion, Sonny Kant. When Sonny Kant never wore hers until she had to. But I didn't think, I mean, I was talking to Brooke Watts, I think they were going to vote on that. Maybe they did, but I don't know.
Right.
So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit different with Katie, like the 300-time national champion.
Yeah.
And her kit was very compliant with the code. So, you know, the template and, you know, and I also think that the UCI, well, the USAC hasn't pushed the Continental Championships as a real elite thing, right? Because so the first year it was both national champions that won the Continental Championships, so they both kind of wore their national kits anyways, and it was the first year elite, and so the second year elite it was, you know, one non-national champion, one national champion, and I think they just kind of, they're like, okay, this is our time to do it, let's push it. So which is totally fair.
Another question with that Continental kit, a baller move going with the white bib
the
shorts.
White bibs.
Talk us through that decision making process with, you know, sort of eschewing the more classic black bibs.
Well, okay, so all right, hear me out. When I got to the line, so I got a box when I got to Europe, and in that was I had four of these white skin suits, and I pulled it out and I'm like, these are awesome. They're beautiful. I can't wait. I just pulled one out of the box and I put it on. I walked around the USA Cycling House. but I quickly realized about the white bibs and I was like, oh God, this is going to be awful. So, you know, like the first time I lined up with Welt and he was wearing his kit and I'm wearing my kit and I looked over and he looks at me and goes, whoa, what kit is that? it's like the American world champion. It's a little bit different. But and he was like, good luck washing those. Thanks, bro.
That is outstanding.
I
ruined the first one right off the bat. I learned that you have to pressure wash them almost while you're still wearing it. So, like, it's part, like, you get done, you hand your bike off, and then, like, while I'm taking the skin suit off, I'm handing it, and they're just like pressure washing it. Then they get to the bikes. So it's like, you know, there's a routine.
That's fantastic.
This is the lesson learned here. Always pressure wash your kits immediately after your race.
Yeah.
Especially if they're all white. If you have white kits, hit them with a pressure washer, throw them on the ground, hang them on a wall, put them on your van, make somebody hold them and shoot them with the water. Like, that's just the way it goes.
So the second question, sort of along with that, you mentioned this contraband U.S. kit that mm-hmm. that you own. Well, has that been seen in public? And will you post pictures of it?
So Stu took one picture of it. I actually wore. So we knew that it was contraband at the time, and we smuggled it into Belgium and got it. And it was like wah wah. And I was like, you know what? Because I had like two skin suits, right? I didn't even have training kits. So I had like a regular skin suit and like a thermal skin suit. And I was like, Stu, give me the thermal skin suit. It's cold. I'm going training in this thing. So I put all my stuff on. I was just like, I'm doing this. He took a picture of it. We got in trouble and whatever. It was funny.
Okay, so
I wore it once. I don't even know where it is. I'm pretty sure Stu took them. I got a call.
For training rides, just training rides, if we were to pool our resources here, go on eBay, buy a Tyler Hamilton Rock Racing U.S. Oh. champion kit.
Or the Freddy Rodriguez, or the jelly
or
the beans.
Would you wear one of those?
Oh, no. Absolutely. I don't wear I'm totally into it. Yeah, okay. I was just talking to Jim from Jim Heaney from Giro, and I was like, okay, hear me out. All right, what if like I have the first like tie dye U.S. national kit colors?
That's how we can get Bill Walton into cyclocross. I think that's a great idea.
Perfect. That'd be good. Yeah.
Fantastic. So, all right. Now this foray into mountain bikes. We've seen this before. We've seen, you know, Mathieu van der Poel try to do it last year and qualify for the Olympics. We've seen Sven go out there and, you know, not do great. Why is Steven Hyde going to be different out there on the mountain bike?
Well, I'm way better than those guys.
Okay, perfect. Good start.
So,
start at the top.
No. Well, so, okay. I've been racing road, I think, 3 or 4 professional years on the road. I was on a podium one time. That was pretty cool. Oh, 2 podiums. But, like, I don't know. I felt like I was, like, plodding along and, like, I was just kind of doing the thing. And, you know, as a cross athlete, you know, half the year you're like this individual athlete, even though we're on a team and we're all very supportive of each other on this team, right? Like cyclocross world's a big team in the scheme of things. So we're definitely the biggest team in the US. And so you are this individual athlete and everything is kind of like, oh, what does Steven want for this? You know, what is for travel, for whatever. And then all of a sudden you're on this road team and you're all of a sudden like the little brother again in this like huge household, and you just, it's not like it's a bad thing, but you kind of get into these grooves of like, okay, I get to pick where I want to eat. Nope. You know, like you get host housing or whatever. You kind of get whatever you get on the road teams. And it's great. It's awesome. It's an adventure. And you get to hang out with all these cool dudes and gals of all these teams. And it's like a big roaming circus around the country. But I was never in love with it. And I never, I don't know. I never really saw anything going with it. And I don't know. I'd love to do something. I never thought I would do anything great per se in cyclocross or any cycling. And then I was like, oh yeah, I won a national championship. That's pretty cool. Oh, I could do that. Maybe I could do something else. And then I thought about it. I was like, well, I'm never going to do anything in the road if cyclocross is always my go-to and my like number one. So I figure, you know, I used to race mountain bikes when I was younger. That's what got me into racing. I was good ish in the Southeast. I mean, I won a lot of races, and then I went to road racing because it was difficult and, you know, just led me in that direction. So I kind of thought, I want to get back to it. I want to get to really having fun, doing something that I absolutely love. And I think that's why those guys went for it, too. It's something that they absolutely love, and it it's a passion and not just, like, racing. And I feel like that's with road. It's just racing, and then people get on, like, why did Peter Sagan want to go, or, you know, why did he want to go to the Olympics? It's like, he loves mountain biking and he gets out there and he's super good at it. So I wanted to do that. And I figure like, okay, I just turned 30. We have one, I maybe I have maybe I have a shot at going to the Olympics in 4 years. I don't know, but I'm not going to know if I don't try. So I'm going to like dip my toes in this year and say I've got 4 years to try, and maybe it happens. Maybe we get two spots. Maybe I am good at it and I get the one spot. I don't know. Or maybe I'm like the worst at it. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, timing wise, you're right. It's a fantastic time to do it because it's the beginning of the, you know, the sequence for everyone who wants to go to the Olympics. I mean, you got a fresh 4 years in there. When you said that, I was super excited about it because this is our whole goal of doing these shows, is that we want to get people who are cyclocross fans to realize that cross country mountain biking is just as fun to follow and participate in, and try to, you know, maybe sort of breathe a little life back into the interest in the U.S. scene. And you racing, I think, for all of these cyclocross fans is no pressure on you, is going to do that. I mean, at least they have another name in there that they can follow and see how you're doing week to week. What's the schedule? What are you keying on?
So this year it's going to be pretty small because it's by myself. I'm going to do a lot of like the Kindy Cup East races. So I'll start out with some of the Kindy Cups. There, I'm going to do some of the Canada Cups, like Mont Tremblant and stuff like that, and then kind of end it. I'm going to do Nationals. So kind of a big block there. I'm going back for my Narweasels. This is...
Right. I heard a little about this Narweasel.
I just want to shout out right now.
This is what I heard a little bit about, so go ahead.
I just want to shout out to Kerry Werner. Bro, I'm coming for you. You beat me last year, and it's not going to happen again. Sorry. I've literally been watching mountain bike videos all day, so basically I'm professional again.
All right.
He says differently, I think.
So this is when is Narweasels, because we got to start building this up now.
July 1st.
Okay, July 1st, main event, Werner versus Hyde. National.
Oh, so it's like the week after Nationals.
It's the week. Is it before or after?
I think it's after. Aren't Nationals in June? Like third weekend in June or last weekend in June? That's what I was thinking. I could be totally wrong.
I think it's 2 weeks before. I think I do that and then go down to Snowshoe.
Okay.
And then get ready. So it's my prep.
So nice. I'm excited to see you at Snowshoe because, you know, I want an East Coaster to take it to the people from Colorado and California, because the last time mountain bike cross country nationals were on the East Coast, those folks came to Pennsylvania and then they couldn't stop complaining about how the mountain bike trails were full of rocks, and this isn't mountain biking.
And roots. Don't forget the roots.
Gosh, roots. Yeah. What are these?
Yeah. Well, if you've ever seen any Olympic courses, you know why. Mountain biking light. They're like path riding light with some rock gardens. Yeah. So July 1st, and then it's 2 weeks. It looks like there's on the 15th and 16th, I'll do the Eastern Grind races in Catamount. And then that's a Pro XCT, and then the Kindy Cup East the next day. And then on the 23rd is, so the end of the month is Nationals at Snowshoe.
Got it.
And then Boston Rebellion. I'll do Boston Rebellion, and then the subsequent that's the HC, and then the Kindy Cup the next day. So then I call it, we start doing Cycle Smart cyclocross camps.
Well, what if those all go, stellar and you have the chance to go hang out at Mount St. Anne?
Well, you know, I thought about that and, I don't know. It's a thing where I can't yet put all my, you know, eggs in this basket, right? Like I need to ease into it. Cyclocross is still my big paycheck, and I still have a lot to do with it. And I there's still levels that I want to reach with it. So I just want to dip my toes in it. I want to be patient with it. I want to learn how to race mountain bikes again. I want to get to know the racers. I want to get to know the courses. I want to remember what it's like to set up mountain bikes and have a mechanic specifically for that. And, you know, tire choices, all these things. Right. So I don't want to push my luck and fitness too far into the season. Cause I mean, then we have World Cup.
Yeah, it comes up fast.
Hot.
Yeah,
we have a month and a half to get ready for World Cups.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
I mean, Rochester's on the 9th and 10th of September, so it's like, yep. And then we have Iowa right after that. Waterloo, yep. KMC, Charm City. I mean, it's like 10 races right off the bat. So
with this more concentration.
Yeah, I got to buy my time, I guess. Yeah. Make sure.
So for concentrating more on maybe your European legs of the cyclocross season, does that mean that you know when you're setting out your schedule that you may forego some of the USC ones to stay in Europe and race there instead?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think having the points and starting on the front row is big and it's helpful, but I'm not finishing in front row spots. So, you know, for me, I think it's great to win races and it's money and that's awesome and there's prestige in winning these races, but I think I'd like to see what happens when I get thrown in a real case scenario in Europe. And I'm okay letting those points go. And then if I'm starting on the second row, I deserve to be starting on the second row or third row. I'm not finishing on the first row spots, right? So like it's fine. I'm fine with that. I'm not going to lose these races because I'm not starting on the front row. And I think it'll put me in a spot to like race more realistically. And I'm totally into that.
It's similar to what we've heard from Katie Compton where, you know, next year, I think she's going to do the whole, Dave Ave series, you know, and skip out on a lot of the U.S. races. And what Mark Legg was saying was that it's really just to race against that competition and have that high level of competition week in, week out, and to be more prepared for the World Cups and Worlds and everything else.
Right. And if we're looking at it like, okay, so if you're looking at it as a, you know, let's just say like Katie, a dominant CX racer, right? What are the points for being in the U.S. the whole time? What are the pros to racing all of these races if your goal is still in Europe? There's not a series to win overall, right? Like even if there is, there's no money for it. You know, there's hardly any prestige at this point because no one knows about it. I mean, let's be real on it.
Yeah.
I would love it to be different, but it's not. And I think at a certain level, if you get the chance to do it, you got to say like, okay, well, maybe I just got to go do this. Look, I mean, Jeremy did it. You know, Powers went and like kind of streamlined his season. And everybody gave him crap for doing 1C1. Well, I might just miss whole races. You know, it's unfortunate, but I'm given a chance to be at this level. And I'd be remiss not to take it.
Yeah.
I might be terrible. I don't know. It could totally backfire, but yeah. I'm willing to do it. I'm like I said, I'm 30. I got my first national championship. Who knows? If I do this 5 more years, fantastic.
We may have lost him.
Spanish internet.
Spain. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of,
I didn't hear a lot of that, but I did hear.
Oh, you're here.
Oh,
hey!
Yeah. We were just going on without you. You disappeared completely. Freaking Hyde is going to make me edit like a beast on this one.
Yep.
Hang on.
Do you want to try reconnecting? Or
come on, Spain. Are you guys, how's our signal?
You sound good.
We got you.
That seems better.
Did you just readjust the bunny ears?
Oh, wait, I hear you now.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah, I had to put a lot of tinfoil on my head.
I knew it.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, if we sound like robots, it's okay, because you're coming through okay on this end. So we'll be good. No, my question before we before Spain intervened.
Currently still beginning Spain. Come on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
now?
Go ahead.
Okay. Right. Yeah. You know, you're talking about winning your first national championship at 30, and then before Spain intervened, I was going to use that as a segue into the change of the date for nationals. I'm assuming that's something that you're in favor of.
I am. I am in favor of it. I mean, it makes sense for, like, we just talked about going to Europe and kind of making it a bigger stay. One of the big challenges for going over to Europe, and it's, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, is the travel. It is a big thing, and there are lots of scientific deniers out there, but it's a thing. You lose a lot going back and forth, and it goes both ways, right? So like when those guys come over here, they're put down a little bit, and which apparently doesn't matter. But when I go over there, I'm already like, 70%. So I'd love it if you just like maybe be a little fresher when I race. So yeah, it's great. And then, you know, we have time to prepare. We have time to prepare for the world championships, right? It's not like, okay, boom, go. Who's on worlds? Go. Right? Like, that's the whole thing. Every year it's like, okay, we have 1 to 2 people that are probably definitely going to go. And then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, who wants to go? Who can't go? Boom, 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 boom. And everything happens. And then all of a sudden they go for one race or two race, right? Like this year, Fuji, right? So like Carrie went over and did Fuji, and like all these people for the first time went over and did a World Cup at Fuji. And it's like this frozen death march. And everyone's just like, I don't know what's going on. it's not good prep. So you gotta like, we need time to get over there. And if we're going to send people over there, you know, as world virgins, can't be like that anymore. So I think December is a great way to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think nobody wants to race after December anyways. Like none of the, who's going to go on all these series races? I think, people start kind of winding down, the holidays, all this stuff. And then January kind of dies anyways, so might as well just send it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. And this was a big topic of conversation out in Colorado Springs at the like annual race directors meeting. And I mean, I think it's, you know, it's interesting to hear from you about the stresses of of travel and how it impacts your form and fitness, and seeing that, you know, what USAC does with the juniors where they take them over like 3-4 times a year. I mean, that seems a little extreme to me. I mean, I understand getting the experience, but I mean, also these are kids who are in school. So, I mean, you're missing out on a lot, you know, school life, et cetera, with all that.
Absolutely.
And I think it makes sense.
And you see them and they do like the kids do well at the races and they're like, they're super motivated at the beginning of the year. And then like by the third airplane, they're just like, they walk over and they're zombies and they're just like, hey, I stashed a bunch of cereal here last time. Where is it? I'm going to go pound it right now. okay. Whoa. Hands off the Nutella, dude. Like, right. So you see them all crack. At first they're super motivated. And then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, let's get this over. So let's avoid that. Let's try to give these kids a chance and let's try to give morale up and, you know, have kind of real attainable time frames for goals.
So so since we're talking about the end of the season, and I sort of want to loop back around to the beginning of the season. So you're talking about fitness and keeping fitness through the whole thing, yet you have these two opportunities in the beginning of the year, much like last year in Waterloo and in Jingle Cross, to have Europe on your own turf and these early season World Cups. You know, you've talked about this new program and being ready later in the year. Do you still turn around and try to focus for those first two World Cups in the U.S. and make those priority races?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a big turnaround there, right? So like we can go real, real hot in September, try to do well at those races, and then taper off, right? Because then we have some racing before the Continental Championships, and then it's going to be like pretty heavy travel and whatnot. So it's not like I can really train any in that time period anyways. So kind of maximizing rest through there, I think I can hopefully just run off that fitness for a while. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, my 10th at Iowa last year was huge for me. I really like, I put everything into that. I'd love to be able to come away with another top 10 or better. And just push when I can, when I'm at my best and on my home turf, I'd love to be able to take advantage of that.
So, I mean, and you know, tough question, but in your when you're planning for this and how you feel you stack up against the rest of the world, what's your everything goes right scenario? Where do you think you can finish in these first couple World Cups?
I think, you know, given the same kind of conditions, say, at like Iowa, and now that we're moving to Waterloo, I think another, like, top 10 to top 5 at Iowa, I'd love that. I think Waterloo is going to be a little bit different. It's a lot more power, a lot less up and down, and I do tend to do pretty okay at those like up and down courses. I'm basically a cyclocross enduro rider at this point. So good.
You and Kevin can you can talk about enduro.
Kevin just perked up.
Yeah, Kevin was somewhat annoyed that we chose this time in the afternoon because he had to end his enduro downhill session today to get home and record.
It's okay. The bike is still in the truck. I'm gonna take it right back to the slopes after it's.
Yeah, I'm really gonna pioneer the World Cup enduro cyclocross this year.
Nice.
So look for it.
You know, we can't give any spoilers or results from Paris-Roubaix, but because Taylor hasn't watched it yet. But on Twitter today,
I haven't watched it either.
Oh, all right, Kevin.
Okay, good.
But on Twitter, we were talking about you know, just how they were all sort of single tracking through the cobble section. That Grand Duro, I think, is the next next big thing.
Yeah, Grinduro.
No, Granduro.
Granduro.
So like road Grand racing, Duro. You know, like Grand Tours and Enduro. Okay. So you only like score the cobbled sections.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, that's how they race it anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That makes total sense.
Yeah. Steven, I have another question for you. So you have that new, that Cannondale mountain bike over there with you right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are the trails like over there then?
The trails are interesting. So they don't do... So when I said Malaga is a lot like LA, it's a lot like LA in like temperature. I mean, it's like... gets up to 70. It's awesome. It's super dry, but it's rained a little bit more than it has in other years. And when it does rain, the ground just can't take it. And so the trails, which they like to build in straight up and down fashion. So big enduro, big downhill scene here. I've literally found two single track trails in this entire area. And everybody keeps saying, oh, just go over here. And all the single track is here. But they're like goat paths and then downhill trails. And so with the rain, I mean, there's even like there's a mountain bike park here and there's like dual slalom tracks and all this stuff. But like, I don't think people like to do a lot of trail maintenance here. Like, okay, I just want to say, God bless the ones that do trail maintenance because... man, I'm going down some of these trails and I'm like, all right, I'm on my Scalpel SI. I'm a pretty good guy at downhilling. This is all right. But I've never done like downhill. And so I'm getting on some of these tracks. I'm buzzing my butt on the rear tire. And then I'm like ripping around some like pine tree. And then there's just this 2-foot rut straight down the middle of the track.
Have you considered a drop a post?
Got to get that drop up.
I considered literally just... loosening up my seat collar and slamming it for some of the trails. Like, I seriously considered that multiple times on these trails. It's funny, you just ride these fire roads and then bomb down these, I mean, they're really cool trails, but they're good, they're technical.
You need to make a road trip to Andorra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Recon the World Cup course.
I think it's more of a day trip than more than a day
trip.
I think
it's like an overnight at least.
I will tell you this. When I saw Kay Werner yesterday, he is using a dropper post on his bike now.
Yeah, he would. So there's a certain technical prowess that one has to have to not use it, and he might not have it.
Outstanding. Fantastic.
Perfect. So maybe that can be what you aim for at Snowshoe. I mean, obviously, you want to aim for the podium, maybe,
Have a
nice result, get the jersey so you can have matching cross and mountain bike jerseys. But for sure, you should be the first finisher without a dropper post.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, you could have also gone and raced. There were a couple guys racing. So Simon Andreasen.
Yeah.
We're moving in MTB news there since the people, you know.
Which looks like he got injured, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He was racing in Germany and first lap went down pretty hard in the hospital. So not a good way to start his season off. And then, Kevin, did you see the Kohlhavi win?
Oh, yeah. That was interesting.
So the Bolotica 30?
Yeah.
In the Czech Republic, where Kohlhavi and like this second place guy are wheeling together over the finish line.
it's really interesting seeing all these guys spread out all over the place right now.
Yeah. That was an odd one. But Steven, we're gonna we'll only keep you for a little longer, but I do want to talk about Bonelli some, which just happened.
Yesterday. Short track is probably happening like right now.
Yeah, so the cross country happened yesterday. And the main thing that I wanted to just talk about, because I think we came down a little hard on possibly American and North American. You know, one, the racing scene, but two, just the racers. And if you looked at the women's race at Benelli, that was a tough race with some top pro caliber competition in it.
Yeah.
You know, so Erin Huck, another Cannondale rider there, Steven, taking the win.
Right.
It's a great win for her. You know, she's really coming on, somebody who has national champ now, right? Isn't she?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, national champ.
And then Kate Courtney, who's been racing awesome, in second place. Emily Batty down from Canada, from Trek, in third place, somebody who's, you know, racing for podiums at World Cup races. Behind her, another one who's racing for podiums, Catherine Pendrell.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Eva Lechner in there at seventh, Magli Rochette in eighth. I mean, that's a damn. Leah Davidson down there in 13th. That is just a strong, strong field in the U.S., in the U.S. Cup. It'd be nice if they had coverage of something.
I agree.
Yeah, it would be nice.
You know, I think that they're doing an okay job online. I think that if you all follow U.S. Cup on Twitter, they have a lot of good video. But even I will ding them on this. I'm going to the site today to look for a race report, and there's not even one there.
Nothing.
You know, it's just results. No race report. Don't know what happened in there. I know that Courtney was leading most of the race, little bobble with a couple laps to go. Huck was able to take advantage of that and get ahead and keep the lead. It sounded like an exciting race. Batty pretty much started out in third and stayed there the whole way. But yeah, I mean, just a rundown is gonna help get the word out about this race, and we're not getting any of that. And I think that's a failure on the side of the series.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was like
it's the same thing we're seeing across all of cycling right now. I think Road's doing a pretty decent job. I've watched a couple of live videos and stuff with the Road, but with Cross, we didn't get any coverage. And I think with Mountain, we're seeing the same thing. And
I mean, again, is it just difficult to provide coverage for these things? I mean, isn't that the problem with the cross country right now anyhow?
I mean, it seems like it. I mean, a couple of years ago, you remember they were doing live streaming of some of
because it was
pro CX, and it's like they had like one stationary camera, so you would see someone come by like every 12 minutes, 15 minutes.
It was not the Red Bull footage.
No.
But I didn't even I didn't even mind the stuff that they were doing. It looked like a mobile phone with a stabilizer, so the video that they were putting out there on Twitter was not bad. But you know, go that second step and just sort of grab all those clips together and put it up somewhere, so if somebody wants at least an idea of what was going on in the race, they'd be able to get it that way, and then just a race report.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I think that without good coverage, it's going to be really difficult to attract non-bike industry sponsors for anything. And you look at the top 10, top 15, top 20, and you look at the teams that these riders are riding for, whether it's men or women, the vast majority of these sponsors are, you know, Trek, Cannondale, Specialized, Cliff Bar. They're all bike industry people. I mean, they're marketing to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, how do you attract those non-endemic sponsors?
Yeah, I don't know. And even on the men's side, again, some real heavy hitters out there. Anton Cooper, you know, again, just getting this from Twitter, crashed early in the race, was able to recover and get the win for Trek Factory Racing. He's a guy worth keeping an eye on. Already won New Zealand national championship in XC and Eliminator. won the Continental Championship as well. Howard Grotz, who is what, Kevin?
He is our national champion.
You got it right.
Thank you. Came in second place. Christopher Blevins, also from Specialized, in third.
Raf Gagne, fourth. He was the overall series winner last year.
Yeah, so good. Gagne, guy that we've seen in cyclocross every once in a while as well. Andrew L'Esperance in fifth place, and Jeff Kabush is down there as well. So
Canadian Mafia.
Yeah, and then the Spanish Mafia, Sergio Montagan in ninth place. So Russ Finsterwald in 11. So again, some big names there. Steven Ettinger, national champion 2 years ago.
Yeah.
in the top 20 as well. Todd Wells in 17th. So a lot of big names again, but it's just maybe we should stop complaining and just do more of this and get the coverage ourselves. But you know, it's hard for us to know what's going on in the race if we're not in California.
Yeah, what we need to do is we need to have Steven live tweet his races for us.
There you go.
Yeah, already planning on it. Got it.
Perfect.
So Steven, I know you weren't planning on doing a World Cups over in Europe, but you know there's one World Cup here in the U.S. this year you could consider doing.
Yeah, it's a little too late for me. I do have to still focus on the cyclocross side of things.
Well, would you consider doing the XC Eliminator race?
Yeah.
No, I have to like take time off and then build back up, right? You just can't be going good all the time. I wish I could. I wish I could just be like
Bill says he'll sponsor you just for this race.
Yeah, June in Columbus, Georgia, Eliminator. It's short. Yeah. The races are like 2 minutes long.
Yeah, you're going to race a total of like 8 minutes the whole time.
I have to say that I know that everyone hates the Eliminator. I would love to race Eliminator. I think it's
we love Eliminator.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's the guys on the World Cup circuit, and especially the mechanics who hated the Eliminator.
Yeah, I used to just go back and like I would start watching the World Cups and then just watch the Eliminator, and then that was kind of it. Yeah.
I was reading something today that the knock from sort of the purists was that mountain biking's not supposed to be done in urban areas. That's why they're against the Eliminator. But I just, hey man, if you got the knobby tires, you ride what you can ride, right? You know,
yeah.
Not everybody lives near trails.
Yeah.
Pushy bikes.
Yeah.
So you guys think that Red Bull's not going to cover it this year with it not being with the other World Cups? I'm kind of worried that they might cut coverage on it.
That's an interesting. That's an interesting call. They may not, because that's a
of the
huge
Eliminator.
Yeah, because I didn't even think about that, Kevin, but that's a great point, because that's the resources are already there. We're already there for them to do it at the World Cup races. They didn't have to change but a couple things.
I watched.
Yeah.
So the whatever the organization is that the UCI is contracted with to run all these XC Eliminator races, like City Bike or City Mountain Bike or whatever, they have film on their website from some of their races they did in Europe last year. It's not bad.
Okay. I
mean, the commentary is not, the English commentary leaves a little to be desired.
But you still have like
there's video.
Full-on races of video. I figure the courses aren't that big, so they don't have to, it's not the same outlay as what they're doing for the World Cup races. I hope that they do have coverage. That would stink. It's a World Cup. They got to.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Good point though. Anything else we need to cover in the mountain biking world?
I don't think so. I mean, we're still a little early on. There's not still a lot going on. I mean, there's a couple of European races that happen, but overall, it's still pretty calm.
Other than Kevin disappearing in the last episode, I think we got a lot of positive feedback. So I think people are digging this. So we can keep going on. And Kevin, I promise to turn your channel on this time when
oh, wonderful.
When I mix.
Wonderful. Steven, last question for me. I've been asking this to the other people I've been talking with here, but what's your favorite place to mountain bike in the U.S.?
Ooh, well...
And I know you're a transient guy, because everyone else just like always says their hometown, but you're kind of all over the place, so I expect something good here.
Yeah, I've ridden a lot of different places. I really liked Oregon. I honestly like I really like riding in where I live now in East Hampton. I know it's not a lot of it isn't technically mountain bike trails. There's a lot of snowmobile trail and a lot of like backcountry trail that is just you can go forever. I like going on these like vision quests out there and just shredding it, and they're really challenging. I'm having so much fun exploring the area that I live in now, and because I'm not from New England, I'm from Florida, and so I'm really into New England trails.
Fantastic.
All right, good answer.
Good.
All right, well, Steven, thank you so much for joining us and staying up late in Spain to chat with us. And
We're letting him go thanks just in time. Me. The restaurants are just getting ready to open.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. not a joke either. I mean, when we were in Andorra, like I think it was we were across the street from this sort of pool complex, swimming pool, like snack bar thing, and it was just like quiet every night, and we'd go to sleep, you know, 10, 11 o'clock, and then Friday night at midnight it opened up, and it was like hundreds of people in there, and not just like, it wasn't like, you know, party disco time, it was like families, like little kids running around at midnight, you know, and it just was like this huge party until 4 a.m.
So, absolutely. I mean, all the places around here, to get a reservation, like it's past 8:30, 9 o'clock to even just get in the door. Nothing opens before 9 o'clock. And then siesta, you get home from your ride, everything's open. When you're leaving, you're like, oh, everything's so vibrant. There's all these frutarias and these little shops and stuff. And you come back from your ride and it's like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and everything is shut down. It's a ghost town. And if you don't have groceries, you're screwed. And on Sunday, everything shuts down too.
So have you been partaking in the siesta? Have you?
Oh, absolutely.
Nice.
I am full on Spanish lifestyle here. So you do your siesta, you pop up, everything starts opening up, you go get your espresso and hang out at the coffee shop or whatever. And then everyone kind of does the dinner thing, and then you go home and you take a disco nap. And then you wake back up about like midnight, and then you go out again until like 4. So
you're going to have to that's what you can import back from Spain to the US.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Irregular sleeping patterns.
Yeah. Outstanding. Perfect. Yeah. All right, man.
That's
well,
great.
I'm sure we will chat again before cyclocross season starts up, especially after you get in some of these races. We'll give you a call then and see what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me again. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, fantastic. We'll talk to you
thanks,
soon.
Thanks, Steven.
All right. See you, Steven.
Okay. Bye.
Hey there, cyclocross friends, this is Bill. Just wanted to jump in here really quick and let you know that even though we just said goodbye to Steven, he hung around, just liked our company that much that he didn't want to get off the phone and go to sleep. So you're going to hear him come back into the conversation in a minute, and it's not a mistake or a continuity error or my bad editing. It's just that he hung out and was still here. Okay, let's get back to the show. Kevin, why don't you tell us what's going on? You were actually talking to nemesis of Steven Hyde on the mountain bike, Kerry Werner, and we can, you know, once we sign off here, we can play that tape. So tell us where you were and what went down.
Sure. So yesterday here in Knoxville, Tennessee, the Kona team riders were out doing a Kona demo here locally. So both Kerry Werner and Spencer Paxton were out here cruising around. So they're preparing for the Pisgah stage race out in near Asheville there. So I had a couple words with them. They talked about their plans, mostly doing adventure mountain biking, as they like to put it. More baggies in their future. Kerry definitely mentioned doing some racing there with Steven. So
yeah, we had a lot of fun last year, and at that one race, it was funny. Like, he had never raced kind of in the New England races, and I hadn't raced an elite mountain bike race in a long time. And so we kind of like And our weasels is kind of a hard, like, old school type course where you start on the ski slope, you do the climb, and then you descend. And these guys went out so hard, like World Cup hard. And we're going up this climb, and there's like three of us, and then this dude Noah passes us, and he's like this 6'4" guy, and he's like local New England ripper. And he just rips by. He's like, let's go. And I was so, like, redlined, absolutely smashed. All I could think of was, like, if these guys go this hard, I can't do this. This is insane. And I look over, and Carrie's, like, bleeding out of his eyeballs. And then the guy eventually cracks. And then we're kind of riding and talking, and it's like, hey, was that really hard for you? And he's like, yeah, I thought I was going to die. I was like, okay, cool, thank you.
He told me about one last epic pass he made on you at the end of that race.
Oh, I hate it. I literally just watched the video of it, and I just, like, died inside of me. Yeah, he outraced me. He outraced me, little bastard. But, yeah, I'm going to get him this year. This is literally my only goal this year. Maybe win some races. I will get... If he's 51st, I'm going to be 50th.
Well, you know, his goals sound a lot familiar to your goals, then. It sounds like you guys are going to be sparring here a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be like it's going to be like the longest mountain bike race ever. We're going to be track standing.
Outstanding. Yeah. That's great. Hey, yeah. Steven, where can people follow along with you?
You can try to find me on Twitter. I don't really use it very much. It's my name, Stephen P. Hyde. Not Stephen Hyde. There's a British guy named Stephen Hyde, and he wants to sell me that for a lot of money. And he's crazy. Stephen T. Hyde with a T.
Wait, what's the going rate yeah, for selling a Twitter profile?
Do we need a GoFundMe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I was like, yeah, cool, that'd be great. Like, I'd love that. And then he was like, yeah, so I'm like $8,000. And I was like, okay, you're talking to the wrong person. I think you have me confused with a real famous person.
With a Stephen Hyde of that 70s show.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You can get me, you can follow me on Instagram, Stephen Hyde. And then my website, StephenHyde.com. So,
cool. Yeah. All right, cool. We're going to listen to this Kerry Werner interview, and we'll see all of you all next time.
Sick. Awesome. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you, man.
All right. See you, Steve. Good talking to you. Later, buddy. Bye.
Bye. All right, guys. Bye.
All right, so let's do this real quick. Guys, we're at the Tennessee Valley Bike moving party. We got Kerry Werner here, Spencer Paxton. What are you guys doing here?
Well, we were both walk-off judges.
Uh-huh.
Doing some bike riding at the demo today, which was sweet. Now we're just hanging out.
Baker Creek Preserve, right?
Yeah, Baker Creek Preserve down here in Knoxville, Tennessee. So, outside just riding around, you guys have the Pisgah City race coming up, right?
Yep. Day zero is on Monday, but racing starts Tuesday, and then it's 5 days of mountain biking all the way through Saturday.
Cool. Do you guys have a plan for this, or is it just all out?
I don't know. Like I was telling Spencer, it's going to be different this year because last year and in the years past, it's always just been two kind of fast people at the front. So the racing dynamic has just been like, you know, waiting for somebody to make a mistake or something.
Yeah.
So this year there will be four to five fast guys at the front. So it'll be interesting to see how we can mix it up. And we're both wearing Kona jerseys, so that'll maybe
add a little team dynamic to it. Yeah.
Right, so you guys are both Kona team riders, right? So, Spence, you're from the West Coast. Kerry, you're from the East Coast, right? So, we got some separation here. How is it different being out here on the East Coast opposed to the West Coast?
Well, I've done a fair bit of racing out on the East Coast as well. But I cut my teeth stage racing with races like the BC Bike Race.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I hear, riding in Pisgah is just in terms of it's rough and tough and steep. And so might find some similarities there, but definitely respect being in somebody else's backyard. So come Kerry, show me around. We'll be good.
And Kerry, you're pretty familiar with this all, right?
Yeah, so I did this stage race. This will be my third time. And I live in Winston, so like the mountain biking is not very good there, and so whenever we want to go mountain biking, this is usually the place we come. So I know the trails pretty well, and they're some of my favorite trails that I've ever ridden in the forest. So, I mean, it's pretty all time.
So, this is primarily a Sugar Cross audience, obviously. So, this is for Sugar Cross Radio. So, I think everyone's pretty familiar with Kerry. Kerry had great nationals this year. Spencer, can you tell us a little more about your background?
In cyclocross or just in general?
Cyclocross, generally speaking. Let's give everyone a good introduction to you.
I come out of the Pacific Northwest. I grew up in Washington State, and I've been riding my whole life. But for cyclocross fans out there, a big mentor of mine in my early years was Eric Tonkin, who also rode for the Kona Factory team. And he's out of Portland, Oregon, Team S&M. So Tonkin really helped bring me up through the ranks with the Cobra Cross Crusade series in the fall, and then the mountain bike scene in Oregon and Washington during the summertime. So, you know, over the years I started riding for Kona in 2011, coming out of Tonkin's program, and have focused on cross-country mountain bike ever since, doing some World Cup stuff, other international competitions. But I did do a few full cyclocross seasons back in 2012 and 2013 and had some, I would call them mediocre results, but I was up there. I had some top 10s at some USGPs when the USGP was still serious, and enjoyed it. That could be in my future, getting back into that.
All right. And Kerry, so you've done some European racing now too. How's it trying to handle a full cross schedule now and doing some mountain biking here as well?
Well, so like for me right now with Kona, it's actually quite an ideal situation. All my eggs are in the cyclocross basket, but I have the ability to get the equipment and some support to do some of the mountain bike stuff, which works out for me. So like my mountain bike season will be the Pisgah Stage Race, Transylvania, and then Nationals, since it's in Snowshoe, which is about a 5-hour drive from Winston. So that's about my mountain bike season with some local stuff thrown in there. And I feel like that'll set me up pretty good for the upcoming cross season. And it'll give me a little bit of time to do some adventuring. Emily and I have a parkway through ride planned, so that'll be cool.
Sure, so I guess that's my next question. So you guys both come from a traditional cross-country background, right? I mean, you both have done World Cup mountain bike races. It doesn't seem like this is much on your schedule anymore. What kind of racing are you guys doing this season primarily then?
I'm stepping back from the World Cup XCO format this year to focus for this year primarily a domestic season. So some of the big priorities are events like this, the BC Bike Race, the Epic Ride Series events. But we're also kind of tailoring in some other kind of a backcountry, outdoor, just plain old non-competitive mountain bike aspect to what we do as well. Blend that in with the high-end competition.
Well, so, and that kind of seems to generally be the way you see America going right now, right? I mean, you see a lot more of these epic outdoor rides and these longer mountain bike rides. Do you think that cross country as we used to know it might be kind of slumping down now, or do you think cross country is still alive here and going?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, like, the top, I don't know, 2 or 3% in the sport in terms of fast guys are still chasing the you know, the World Cup desires and dreams and that. But I feel like there's also a lot of people that had gotten into the sport and tried their hand at that kind of racing, and they kind of see like, hey, you know, maybe this isn't really in the cards for me, this like specific type of cross country, like, you know, 3 to 5K laps, super fast. Like they find that's not really their style, and then they see that they've been able to find a market, I guess, or make these big adventure mission type riding marketable.
Yeah. What I'd equate it to is the sport's matured and there's a lot more diversity in it than even when we got into it. And it's like, maybe if you use running as an example, in the beginning of running as a sport, it was on a track. You'd run around a, you know what, a 400 meter track and do running races. Now you've got ultra marathons, you've got regular marathons. Who do you know who calls himself a runner and they only go out and run the 800 meter dash or the 1600, which is really the equivalent of the World Cup in terms of mountain biking? So in some sense, it's as healthy as ever. Today was just the season opener for Olympic cross-country racing over in California. But meanwhile, we got a bunch of other cool stuff going on. So I think in some sense, it's as healthy as ever. Today was the season opener for Olympic cross-country racing over in California. But meanwhile, we got a bunch of other cool stuff going on. So I think...
Yeah, I think that's important to note that it's not like necessarily dead or dying. But I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that maybe you are talking to or maybe myself is talking to that have kind of like fallen out of that, you know, like that style of racing, and then this perspective of like, oh, it's dead,
right?
Or okay. Like, or you know, like people like try a whisk, like an epic rides, and they're like, oh, this is actually really cool, and then they kind of like start to focus on that kind of thing over maybe, you know, like the big XC races.
Do you think cyclocross has dug into that market a lot then? I mean, you're kind of at the same time scale of race then. I mean, high intensity 1 hour, just like all out, or?
Yeah, so I think like with cross though, like there's no other way to do cross. Like cross is an hour on a course where like mountain biking is, you know, you can do big 50 mile races, you can do short XC races, short track races, or you can just go ride and have fun.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I guess you can equate cross to like gravel biking or whatever, but I mean, it's still so different. And in a way, I feel like the gravel biking and cross, while it is so different and kind of polarizing, it's still also the same, because you see a lot of the people that are into gravel racing and that kind of thing, they're still really into racing cross as well. It's like an atmosphere thing.
Right, you know? Yeah. So, Spencer, I guess the last question I have for you is, you're out in Mongolia doing a stage race, is this correct?
No, that was another Kona guy, though.
Okay.
Teammate Corey Wallace.
Oh, okay, got it, yeah. Got it, okay. So, and then, is Barry still participating much on the team at this point nowadays?
Yeah, no, well, Barry's the manager for the endurance program.
Really? Okay.
At Kona, and so okay. he still competes himself, and he is even further ahead of us in terms of evolving out of what I would say what was known as the traditional form of mountain bike racing, which was, when we got into the sport, either cross-country or downhill. It was simple as that, but he's still very involved.
It's kind of, I feel like it's kind of his job to say like, okay, this is what we're going to do to make something cool and marketable. Like,
yeah.
We're not just going to go race an XC race and like do that thing. These guys for the Epic Ride series, they're going to tie in some cool adventure mission riding with it. So it's like, it's really cool because, as you said, that's like where people are going and people are getting more interested in that. And I feel like if more people can relate and kind of have this feeling like, yeah, I could do that, you know, like, it'll just get...
At any level.
Yeah, right? Because it's like
cyclocross.
It's like, oh, I see these huge XC races, and like, man, I can never get there. It'll take forever. But it's like, I could go for a big bike ride and see something cool. Like, that would be really easy.
Yeah, and that's a cool thing of having somebody like Wicks at the helm. He's been in the sport a really long time, and so... it goes to show that there's a continuum of value that you have in an industry and a sport, even if you're not participating in what was once perceived as the ultimate. There's a lot more out there, and you know what we've done, what we're doing with the endurance team is trying to you know, have fun and add value with the way the sport's evolved in terms of not just racing, but it's an outdoor sport at the end of the day. It's being outside, being in the mountains. So blending in the competitive acumen that we've paid a lot of attention to over the years, but also we're like anybody else. We like to be outside.
Have fun.
At barbecues.
Yeah.
Walk-offs.
Eating Mexican corn on a cob.
Well, I'm Mexican this weekend.
Yeah.
All right, so one last question. A little aloha question here. I'll have you each answer. Best mountain biking location in the country?
I would say that I'll start. So I haven't done much mountain biking up in the Pacific Northwest. So if you ask me this after July this coming July, I'll probably have a better answer for this. But I would say right now, for me, I think it's Pisgah.
Yes,
I really do. Like, it's just like the amount of trail that if you park your car at the Hub in Pisgah or at like the grassy lot just past the Hub, you can do hundreds of miles of trail from there. I mean, there's still trail there that I haven't ridden, and I've been here for the last 5 years in and out. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, I know locals that live here and never get tired of it. The weather is always pretty mild. It doesn't snow here a ton, so it's like pretty much accessible all year round.
Drains well.
I mean, it's a temperate rainforest. It handles water like no other place I've seen. The last year we raced a race that started in the rain, and like it really wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like I didn't have epic mud tires on. It was just like wet. It was fun.
All right, Spencer.
All right, well, I'm glad Carrie said that because maybe I'll find my second favorite place to ride in the country this week. But no, I mean, acknowledging that everybody's biased towards their home, but I will say I have been able to ride my mountain bike in all but, I'm gonna say, four states over the last many years, and Washington State, in my opinion, has a mountain bike resource that's very hard to beat. But I typically say the Cascadia zone. I appreciate so many different places to ride, but the Cascadia zone, which includes Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, hard to beat. But we'll find out. It could change this week.
All right, cool. Well, good luck at the racing this week, guys. I look forward to seeing the results.
Thanks.